This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today I have with me
Nirmala Nen.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Nirmala, you've been very active in various different voluntary organisations in Palmerston North, haven't you?
Yes, I have been. Yeah, that voluntary work has taken a huge chunk of my time over the years.
Okay.
Yeah. You might want to know who I am.
Yes. Okay. Well, give some details about that. Yes.
Well, I am from Fiji, from Fiji, and I was born and bred in Fiji, educated in Fiji most of my life.
Yeah. So you came here as an adult with years of working experience,
yes,
I believe.
Yes, I did. I graduated in 1973.
Yes.
As a dietitian, public health nutritionist. And then I worked for Fiji government for about 30 years. And climbing up the ladder.
Yeah.
So I was right at the top when I left New Zealand and Fiji.
Yeah.
I was the manager of the National Food and Nutrition Center.
Yeah.
And a clinical dietitian before that and public health dietitian before that.
Okay.
So after that, in 2003, I decided, my family and I decided that we'd move to New Zealand. And then I came in first.
Why was that?
Oh, because of the political situation there.
Yes.
Everybody knows that.
Okay.
So, yeah, my husband still held his job there at SPC. So I was completing my contract, so I decided to come first. So, and he followed later. And then I came here, and my son also came just a few months later to start up his PhD at Massey University.
Okay. Yeah.
So that is why I moved to Palmerston North, because of him.
Yeah.
So he started his course at Massey.
Yeah.
And then he did for 2 years, and then after that he got a scholarship to from University of Western Australia to do his PhD. So he changed his program a little bit, and then he went away to Western Australia. And then I remained here because I had already found a job.
Okay. So was it easy to find a job?
Yeah, fortunately I was. It was quite easy for me to find a job at the hospital, first as a at the hospital, and then after about 4 months I found it at public health, as a health promotion advisor for Pacific people.
Yeah.
So I worked in that role for 20 years.
Yeah.
And then I retired 2022.
Yep. Okay.
Okay. So during that time, I worked mainly with the Pacific people.
Yeah.
All the different groups in Palmerston North. And then besides that, that was a full-time job. And besides that, I was also heavily involved with the community service, voluntary work, with the Multicultural Council as the secretary and president for about more than 10, 15 years.
Okay.
And then with the Manawatu Hindu Society, I was vice president for 4 years. And for Satsang Ramayan Mandali, that has... I'm still the secretary.
What was that one?
That's a religious organization.
Okay.
For Hindus, Fiji Indians, mostly Fiji Indians are in that organization. It's called Ramayan. You know what Ramayan is, the spiritual book for Hindus.
Okay.
So that's the name is like Satsang means getting together to study Ramayan.
Oh, okay.
That book.
Yep.
Spiritual. Okay. And then I'm still the secretary, as I said. And then a number of other organizations. I was also the national secretary for the umbrella body of multicultural councils. That was.
How did this happen?
What do you mean?
You were just motivated to do it, or they thought, oh, hey, we need someone, she'll say yes? Or?
Okay, so because I was, I joined the Multicultural Council because when I came here, there was nothing, I was sort of lost, I was lonely.
Okay.
Nobody,
yep.
I couldn't find
any. Because your family
people.
Wasn't?
My family
your...
wasn't here.
Okay.
So I tried to look for organizations or people to from Fiji.
Yes.
So this, I read in the papers that there is one somebody there in this group. So I went there and then we, then they asked me to join the group.
Yeah.
So I joined and then I started attending meetings and all that. And then they knew my calibre.
So
and all
this
that.
Is the Multicultural Council.
Yeah.
So they have meetings that...
Every month, every 2 months.
Okay.
That's way back in...
Oh, okay.
That's way back in...
That's why this is oral history, so
yeah.
People might be listening in 50 years' time.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
So you're saying in the early 2000s, the Multicultural Council here was active, having meetings every month or two.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of meeting? You had speakers or...?
We used to just talk about... There were a number of organizations or groups who were members of that council.
Okay.
Right. So all the reps will come to those meetings and we'll decide what to do. We'll talk about what we should be doing, what are the needs of our community groups and all
okay.
that. So we try to coin some projects or things like that. Like English language was a issue.
Yes.
For most of the migrant
yes.
groups. So we ran English classes free of charge. We
okay.
so look for people who can run those classes.
And you got funding for that, or it was all voluntary?
At that time, not much funding was available.
Okay. Okay.
So we did some fundraising and things like that, or apply for little funds from some agency or something like that. So we ran those, and the young drivers, like migrant drivers, who want to drive, but they have to get a New Zealand license.
Driving license. Yes.
And then some of them would not understand the rules because they are in English.
Yeah.
So we tried to find drivers who can translate those rules into their own languages.
Yes. Okay.
So that kind of projects we did.
Yeah.
Little projects. So those were, and then the Multicultural Council just developed, and we got more and more members.
So when you came, it was very early days for the council, wasn't
it? Yeah.
Okay.
It was running, but it was very early days.
Yeah.
And then people became more and more motivated, so more people came in.
Yeah.
And so my interest was there because I was meeting with a lot of people, and I was trying to get other people to join in and all that.
Yeah.
So I just remained there.
Yes.
And then after 3-4 years, they elected me to be the secretary.
Yes.
So they recognized my skills and whatnot.
They recognize your willingness to say yes. That's a
big
part.
Yes. Because I had that time. I was working full time, but after that I was home. So why not?
Yes. Yeah.
And community service has been my thing, you know. I always did work like after I was.
Yeah.
So after that, I stayed in that role for 4 years, and then after that, I was elected president. So that time we moved places from Church Street to King Street now, and then we had more members joining in. By that time, there were about 30-35 members, community groups who were members.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So
with the multicultural, a group would join and send a representative. Is that the structure?
Yeah.
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 Okay. Rather than an individual being
yes,
a member.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not
okay.
individuals. We did not take members as individuals.
Okay. Yeah.
But the groups will join, and the groups had to have about 15 members.
Yes.
That they should be registered themselves. You know.
Yeah.
So that's how the organization grew. And then we started getting some more funds because people saw agencies saw our work.
Yes.
In involvement with the ethnic communities and all those things that we were doing. So they started giving us more funds, and then MSD came on board.
Yes.
And City Council was already on board. So And then there are so many other funding agencies that we applied for, so we got some funding from there. Yeah. And then we tried to manage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we tried to do our best with the limited funds that we had. Yeah. But when the Christchurch event happened,
yes,
you know, the shooting of all that,
yeah,
then they started giving a lot of funds to MMC.
Yeah.
I believe because there were a lot of Muslims here, ethnic groups were here, so the funding was diverted here, and then a lot of funds went out to the people.
So it's for those specific groups rather than all the different cultures? Or?
Well, it came to Multicultural Council, and it depended on them who they gave it to.
Okay, yeah.
So
This was money from the government or voluntary
groups? I believe so. I believe from the government.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. Okay.
So so that has been happening. And then recently they have received much more funding, and then they have a variety of programs now, projects going on, which is good, which is really good. Now it has really expanded. And so that was one of my involvement, I would say, in the newcomers network that I established way back in 2009. Based on that, I was recognized for that with a QSM.
Yes, yeah.
And
so what was that? The new you established new, something. You thought, yes, we need. What?
Yeah. No. I was involved in that, and then somehow someone.
You were recognized, but I'm thinking, what was the newcomers network? You thought, oh, there's new people coming. We need some point of reference for them, some sort of support.
We invited them to. Yeah. We encouraged a number of projects. We would make them feel comfortable here.
Okay.
So we organized some coffee mornings.
Yes.
Once a week.
Okay.
Lunch.
Yeah. Yep.
Shared lunches, and evenings we do potluck dinners and things like that.
Okay.
English language programs, and based on that survey that I was talking about. That survey, it established the needs of those different
those groups. Yes.
So we tried to formulate projects based on those stats. So that was something that we did.
Now, can I just ask, because they talk, sometimes with newcomers, you've got, sometimes they say, well, the men are out at work, so they have the contact, but in a lot of work, there's not much chance to talk. Women might be stuck at home, or they might be able to mix more and pick up language better with people, and then the children are in a different situation as well, and the older parents might be isolated at home and not learn anything. It's, what sort of stood out for you with that? Was it mainly women that you were able to help, or men who had
the council was open to everybody?
Yes,
women, young adults, or women, men, older parents, whoever was interested. Refugees, when they came from Nepal and Bhutan, they were very much welcomed.
Yes.
And then we ran special classes for them for language and cultural exchange, food. They used to, because they had very limited knowledge about what was available here in New Zealand in terms of
course.
Food.
Yeah, dietary things.
So we tried to introduce them to different vegetables and fruits and things like that. Yeah. We encourage them to do gardening here and plant those. Like, I was really surprised at one stage, we were doing some gardening projects in Fielding, and then one of the refugees, they didn't know how to store or cook cabbage.
Okay.
I asked them. And they said they dried. Dried it and they preserve it.
Yes.
Dried.
Okay. Yep.
A dried cabbage leaf doesn't have anything in it left. Yeah. You know, so I tried to. That was a real shock for me. But then I told them why they should try to eat fresh. You know.
Yes.
And then there are so many different vegetables, green vegetables, full of nutrients and all that. So I started, because I was a dietitian, I tried
course,
to
yes.
teach
you
them,
show them
how to preserve those nutrients so that it's healthy for them.
Yes.
And so that was another nutrition workshops that I used to do. So my background came in.
Yes,
into play.
Very good.
Yeah.
You could probably teach a lot of New Zealanders about that as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay. I mean, nutrition is something that can be... everybody's interested.
It's very important, but it's not actually the, you know, doctors aren't generally trained in nutrition.
No, they're not.
All that sort of.
But and the thing is that people believe doctors.
Yes.
They would not believe dietitians. You know?
Yeah.
And here in New Zealand, dietitians are very few.
Yes.
And if you want to access them, you have to pay. So.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, in Fiji, our services were free. From government.
Okay.
Then nobody ever paid dietitians and the government.
So you had a lot of people go to dietitians?
Yeah, the doctors will refer them.
Okay.
Refer them to the dietitians and then we will provide the service there for free.
Okay.
Whereas here, even, well, I think in a public system, you can see the dietitian, but it's not very common.
Yes. Yeah.
Sometimes patients
are unlikely to be referred.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and a lot of people nowadays look at the internet. They do depend on research there. And most of, a lot of things are not true.
Yes.
The information that you find on the website are not always true, you know? So, so that's another issue.
Yep. Mm.
And then what else?
Now let's see. There was the Multicultural Council. Then there was the National Umbrella Organization as well.
All right. Yeah.
Yep.
So there were about 22 different councils around New Zealand.
Yep. Okay.
And so the federation of the council is one body,
okay.
And all these people are members of the council. And we used to have meetings 3-4 times a year.
Okay.
And then there was another group, the president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, and I was one of the, I was the treasurer, secretary for 2 years. Mm. Yeah, and then we used to go to the, to Wellington for that.
So that was...
So I suppose that's all, and now I'm retired.
Yes,
so
okay.
I try to look after myself. I spent a lot of time serving the community.
Yes,
and on job, and then now I think I want to spend more time for myself and my family.
Yeah. But you'd know, having spent a lot of time in the voluntary sector, you'd notice what one thing I you go back probably 50 years and you get single income families, and often so there's the partner in the home and often doing a lot of community things as well. So the voluntary sector, and you would get voluntary organisations like Rotary and Lions and so on. A lot of younger working people could belong to that because they had time in their lifestyle. Now, if both parents are working or they're not living together and so on, then they don't have time, and perhaps younger people don't join those groups. So a lot of the burden is on the retired people, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. You've younger seen people, that. We tried to form a youth group as well within the Multicultural Council. But it was very difficult because the youths were all involved in education, teaching.
Yes,
I mean,
studying,
attending, attending universities and colleges and all that. So they didn't have that time. Although they had the interest, they did not have the time.
Yeah.
So it was quite difficult to get them motivated.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We just left that.
Yeah.
So youths were out, and young adults were quite busy with their
busy
professions.
With families and professions, getting established.
And jobs and families and all that. So the older generation and the retired people, they are the ones who were more involved.
Yeah, yeah. And the but also there's a lot of students from overseas. Do they do their own thing, or are they?
Yeah, they... we tried to involve MESI University and IPU, not on regular basis. They didn't just didn't
have
the time.
They'd be busy with their things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they would come during festivals like Diwali. Then IPU would do the music, the drums, and all that sort of thing. They play all the get involved that time, but not regularly.
You were doing a lot with people from other cultures. But also here you're working with local communities. So how did that go? Did you have much contact with local community or with the council and so on?
With the council?
There's the council, yeah. There's government, there's just organizations in the community, local businesses. Are they supporting these groups at all?
I was quite involved with the city council, councillors, and the funding committee. I was on that one.
Yeah.
And
the funding committee.
Yeah.
So that's assisting in all the different groups, and you're there. Yes. Because of your knowledge of the different cultural groups.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And the council gives much support for those things?
Mm.
Yeah.
They receive funding, government funding, and then the committee's job is to allocate it to the different groups.
Okay.
So, because I was representing Multicultural Council as president, so there were other people.
Yeah.
And then we will sit and decide how much money to give to which organizations.
Okay.
So the different organizations will apply for funds for their community work. Yeah.
So what does the funding cover? What are the sort of needs? Is the need for accommodation?
Community service. Community projects.
Such as?
Or cultural.
What do they mean by community?
Like
Diwali? You get funding for Diwali?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Somebody else might want it for some artwork or something like that.
For language classes or something? You get assistance with that for resources or for premises? Okay. Is there a problem with premises, or the council provides those, or you have to provide them?
Premises for what?
Well, if you have, I don't know, do the organizations have offices somewhere?
Oh, yeah, if we wanted to hire a venue, then the groups have to provide a budget.
Yes.
And they have to outline what will they need the money for and how much.
Yeah.
So based on that, we will discuss, that group will discuss and try to allocate reasonable or whatever fund is available to them.
There's one dimension, and that's you've already talked about language and language issues, but the language things will be important for liaising with government bodies, WINS and so on, or with the courts and hospitals and so forth. Do you give support for that sort of thing?
We have the translators.
Okay.
There are translators around.
Okay.
Yeah.
So say there was a court case or some issues with the council,
actually,
you could get someone.
I'm also an interpreter.
Okay.
With the courts.
Yeah. Okay.
Or like government interpreter.
Yes. Yeah.
So most of the time I'm involved in the courts.
Yes.
You know, if there is Fiji Hindi translation from Fiji or from India.
Yeah.
If there is somebody who an accused.
Yes. Yep.
Is on trial or is in court for whatever reason, and the lawyer needs a translator, so they try to contact me to provide that language translation.
And that's in all the preparation as well, or
preparation
or
as well as in the court.
Yeah.
For the hearing.
Now, I suppose that raises an issue. If there is someone who isn't fluent in English and they're being tried for something. Are the proceedings actually translated for them? So they're
you're doing it for
that person as well as for the court. So,
yes.
Okay.
Both ways.
Yeah. Okay.
So the judge says,
yes.
I translate it to the accused, and what the accused says, I translate back to the judge.
Okay.
And the same thing with lawyer. When the lawyer is preparing the case, I sit with them, with the accused person, and then the lawyer talks to me. And I talk to that person, and that person talks to me, and I talk to the lawyer.
Well, that could be quite time-consuming.
It is. And quite tiring, too.
Yes, I could imagine. Emotionally difficult?
Emotionally, yes. Sometimes some of the cases are quite emotional.
Difficult, yeah.
And you have to have a barrier to keep yourself separate from the...
Absolutely. And do you find, I mean, obviously you're someone who's participated in it, you've been willing to do it. Do you find that there's then almost an obligation put on you, or a does it become burdensome, or can you say there are other people who can take some of the load? Or
I don't get that many cases because a lot of Fiji Indians, they speak Hindi, English.
Well, I'm thinking not just the court, but generally with the voluntary sort of things.
Like now I'm feeling under pressure. Too much. That's why I have cut down from, you know, different, I stepped down from different roles.
Yes.
So I'm just holding one or two roles now. So try to.
It raises another issue as well. One concern that we might have in New Zealand with an aging population, how do you care for those older people? And one idea is, yes, these people come in from overseas who can do some of the care work, but we're actually getting a population of migrants that are now becoming the older people. So is that being noted? You know, how, you know, are there issues with old people who may not be fluent in English, but they're getting health or dementia problems and so on, or catering for them? Is that something that's arisen yet?
Older people, I think they have similar issues.
Yes.
But migrants who come, who have come on their children's support, they are the ones who need more help. But migrants who have come professionally to work and then they retire, so they are well established and they can manage
and
things.
They've got the language and they've got the contacts. Yeah,
they can manage themselves. Whereas these older parents who come from, and then if the children don't have that much time, then they face difficulties.
They're very isolated. And
Because many of them would not know how to drive. And the children go to work and they are stuck at home.
Thank you for listening to Manawatū Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatū People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatū Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.